Production number 17629, Mr. David Ridley, reel 5.
Mr. Ridley, reel 5. At the depot at Bransworth, Mr. Ridley, you will be getting recruits from all areas of the country.
Yes, that's right.
Was there a wide difference in the standard of in the quality of those men?
No, not really. They were all young men, all bright and very intelligent. I don't know what they thought of us for having a Geordie dialect. I think it's a bit hard to understand for some people. But we didn't get many from Scotland, though. I don't know why, but it was nearly the Midlands, you know, Liverpool and farther down that way. We had an odd Welshman, but it was nearly always somewhere around the Midlands. But they're all very good, though.
Did it give you difficulties having to deal, as I say, with people from different backgrounds, but not only merely different backgrounds, but from other parts of the country?
Oh, yes.
The Midlands or the Southerner would be more difficult to deal with than the Northerner?
No. There was no trouble at all regarding recruits. In fact, training recruits is a bit of a hard job. And as I said before, after 2 years, I was getting a bit fed up with it. Because you find, you get a raw recruit and you build him up into a fine soldier. And then he's taken away from it. And then you've got to start all over again. Well, by the time you get him into, you know, being a soldier, your job becomes easy. Because you just have to give him a command and it's obeyed. But when one of the raw recruits, you've got to teach them from A to B. Well, I think that's why I got a little bit fed up, you know, with 10. And I know soon when I was transferred to the 17th Battalion, I hadn't been there 5 minutes when I was sent for by the second in command of the battalion. And he says, I'm sending you to the former recruit company. I says, oh, no. I says, I'm just giving it up. And this, I've never known this happen, that recruits go straight to a battalion. They always, in my experience, they used to go to a depot and trained, and once they completed the training, then they went to a battalion. But in the 17th Battalion, we took a full company of raw recruits.
We'll come to that now. We'll deal a bit more time with your work at Bransworth Castle. You say that the conditions improved, the camp was built.
Yes, except
that there were no roads in.
No, that was the only trouble. Later on, they did put the roads in. But
can you describe the camp to me, its layout?
Well, when he went through the main gates, on the right-hand side was the guard room. On the left side was the armory. And if you more or less carried on straight away, on the left-hand side was a number of huts. It was about 6 huts, and that was A Company. And then they were spread round the square, more or less. The square was more or less to the right of the entrance. And beyond the square was the cook houses and the MT garages, petrol station and all that. And there wasn't very much else. There was no sort of area where you could train for do section training and things like that. You had to go elsewhere.
Did you have a naffy on the site?
Yes, there was a naffy there, yes. I had 2 main cook houses, 2 big ones. I don't know how many recruits that they used to intake it, but it must have been colossal. Because we, in each squad, we had about 30 men. And in A Company alone, there was about 5 squads. And that was only just one, you know, one company, as you might say.
But you get a young man coming from a pretty secure family background, and here he is, he walks through the gates. What are the initial problems, or what do you initially try to overcome? What's the first thing you do with him, in effect?
Well, I think the biggest problem was haircuts. Used to come in, you know, with a lock still on his shoulders, and never had any trouble regarding this, but they were a bit reluctant to have the haircut. But apart from that, there was no great problems. You just started from the beginning and you explained what was going to happen to them and all that, and it was up to them whether they became good soldiers or they didn't. I never had any problem that way.
Was there a conscious effort to try and break the home link quickly?
No. When you're an instructor, or in fact when you're an NCO, you become a father. You're a platoon sergeant, but you're a father as well, because you've got to listen to all the, all the troubles and try and lead them. In fact, you've got to look after them. You don't want to take them into action and get them all killed. You've got to take them into action and bring them all out again. I think one strange thing that used to happen, recruits were inclined to do this. Now, eventually they get to know who you were and what you were. And then you were sitting, you had bank managers as recruits, solicitors. And then they would try and take the mickey, you know. They would say, you would probably be taking a lesson, say, on weapons. And they would ask a question with great long names. See? And I couldn't understand it. See? I would say, well, the only way I used to get out of this was, I say, well, if you put that in plain English, I says, I'll be able to answer it. But I says, when you start talking like an Oxford graduate, I says, I can't do it. That's the way I used to get out of it, anyway. It wasn't. It was, you know, they used to try it on, as all recruits do. But no great problem.
The facilities in the camp, were they very good? I think in terms of bathhouses and places.
Yes, well, it was a brand new camp, you see, and it was excellent. From what we were, when we first joined up, we were pushed into these, like the Love Memorial Hall, which was just a hall like this community centre out here, with no facilities for to house troops. As I say, in January, all the parishes froze. No, we had to wash in fire buckets and things like that. There was no facilities for beds or anything like that. And then you move from there into a brand new camp with spring beds, ablutions at the end of each hood, bathhouses, showers. Well, it was amazing. The only trouble, I think, that happened when we first moved in, on the fact that it was a brand new camp, the pipes and the cooking utensils in the cookhouse were brand new, and they gave everybody, well, not dysentery, but everybody had diarrhea, on the fact there was some, you know. But after a period of time, all that hot water and everything cleared all that up.
How many men would there be to a hut?
About 30, well, approximately 30.
And that would be, what, a platoon or a squad or one hut?
Well, a squad.
And you were a corporal when you first went there?
The corporal always used to sleep in the hut. The sergeants in that had the proper ordinary quarters, the sergeant's quarters and the sergeant's mess.
And with a wide variety of personalities, did you have to control any bullying or any physical activities
no,
from time
I've
to time?
No, I've never had anything like that. There's one thing that did happen to me. they were telling me I was sent to Willie Rafferty's platoon. And Willie used to give me the platoon. And in fact, I got light Willie Rafferty at the finish. And we used to use a few swear words. And this particular chap one day pulled me out. He says, "Don't swear at me." And that was it. And I didn't do anything about it. I mean, I could have had him at open front of the company command, but I was in the wrong, really. And I just got up and said, "Well, I wouldn't have to swear at you if you did what you were told."
So you must have had men with what consciences that didn't swear or didn't blaspheme.
Oh yes. Well, I'm not a swearing man, but at times, I'll tell you, when you're dealing with a cruiser, the time you're up the wall at times. But I was reasonably. I never used bad language really. It doesn't get you anywhere, really. It doesn't. And I always thought to lead a bloke and tell him what you want him to do and probably demonstrate that you can do it. If you did it, there's more or less good to expect him to do it as well.
You'd obviously have men who were keen and wanted to do everything right.
Oh, yes,
and the reluctant ones. Did you have a number of those?
Well, regarding recruits being naughty or misbehaving, I never experienced any of that in at Brunsford Depot. Anyway, there was some chaps who put on junkness and things like that, but not in my squad.
Is the discipline in a depot for initial training, etc., stronger and more rigid than the discipline when you're in a normal unit?
Yes, yes, I think so. Well, in my opinion, the British Army is founded on discipline. If you haven't got discipline, all you've got is an armed mob. So therefore, soon every recruit even steps into a depot, he's taught discipline from the beginning. And right up he goes, you know, transferred to a battalion.
In your experience, was the punishments more severe also?
Well, I have not much experience with having to punish people. I think the worst was make them go and peel a sack of potatoes or something like that. That's about as harsh it ever was. But I have seen men on the square loaded, you know, of a full marching order being doubled round the square. But what the devil they've done, I have no idea. They've done something that they shouldn't have done, right? But discipline is born soon as you step over the threshold into a depot, and it's there until you came out of the army. And then probably later on, when we probably talk about Wally Innes, this is one thing that I don't agree with him.
The staff of the depot, you obviously had your staff like yourself, the training staff. What other types of soldiers were in the depot as part of the staff? What other jobs were being done? Obviously, had your cooks, for example.
Well, yes, you had to have an IMT section, you had to have a medical section, you had to have cooks. You know, they were all, well, the cooks would come from the catering corps, but drivers and that were, they were soldiers that had done the training elsewhere, and then they'd gone into the IMT section. Same with the medicals. Everybody has to do the basic training, and then from there, you were either asked to be a dispatch rider, asked to be a medical sergeant, you asked to be a driver, MT driver, or even the select the support companies, the mortars, anti-tank. You had to reply for those. And of course, you had to be good enough to be accepted.
And were those specialist tasks taken elsewhere, out of the camp, in another place, or was it done in the camp itself, in the depot itself?
Well, there was no specialist in the depot, as far as I can remember. There was no anti-tank, no mortars, anything like that. They were taught to you when you went to a battalion. The depot was solely, mainly drill, discipline, and how to, you know, how to dress correctly, how to have your barrack room correct. And it was mostly drill at the beginning and route marching. That was your first initiation. After that, they start to teach you weapons, your rifle, and then you progress from there to the brain gun and to the 2-inch mortar. Also grenades. And that was about your battalion, your platoon weapons. And as I say, once you went to a battalion, then you could go farther on the machine guns and 3-inch mortars and anti-tanks.
Were the instructors split between those who were drill specialists, if you want to say that, and weapon specialists, or would the same instructor do the range?
You did everything yourself. You did. There was a program of lessons to be taught on that particular day, and you did the whole lot.
Did the regiment police the depot, or was it given military police?
No, you policed it yourselves. There was no military police there.
Up with the regimental police. Did you insist on a very high standard of turnout from the very beginning?
Oh, yes, a very good. Yes. And if you start to fail in your job as an instructor, they won't long of getting rid of you. And I'm not saying the senior instructors, I don't know where they came from. I think they were regular soldiers, most of them. But such as myself, I was picked because I was keen in everything. And they were noted on and recorded, and then you had an interview, and then you said, well, would you like to be an NCO? And then you were eventually sent off to a Carter course, which what happened with me. But unfortunately, when I went to Bransford Camp, Bransford Castle, rather, as a Lance Corporal, Dunkirk started. So there, I got no training as an NCO yet. I had to pick it up from, as I say, from Willie Rafferty, Simon Rafferty, and people like that.
So, a great, as an instructor, you would have to present yourself as the way a soldier should look.
That's right. You had to be crazy. I mean, you couldn't go checking somebody for being improperly dressed if you were improperly dressed yourself. So you had to set the standard all the time. And when you lived with 30 men, you had to make sure that they came up to your standard.
Off duty, were you able to relax with the men and be more closer to them?
I think I said that once before, I'm not sure, but I wonder, this particular squad of recruits, there was about eight. All the names began with H, and I took them all home to me one weekend. Oh, my mother fed them. How she did it.
Yes, we have got that. So a great deal of your time was to be keeping your own uniform in shape.
Yes. You had to do... You not only had to keep your own correct, you had to go around and inspect to make sure your base was correct. Because every morning your barrack room was inspected. And if there was anything wrong, the recruits didn't get it, you got wrong.
And this would be inspected by whom on the morning?
Well, it would either Sergeant Major or one of the officers or someone like that. In fact, there was a tale... previous, I was on about this Sergeant Major French. I fell in foul with him, And this particular day, it came on orders that I had to move from one hut to another one. And when I went in that, it was filthy. Of course, I just walked through the door and he followed me in and shot inspected. And I was the one that got the, you know, which I thought was very unfair. It wasn't my fault, lad.
The facilities for keeping uniforms in trim, were there irons allowed in the hut? Or were they personal things?
Oh, no, nothing like that nowadays.
How did you keep creasing your trousers?
You learn from the old sweats, as I say. To press your trousers, you wet the seams of your trousers and you lay them on your mattress, under your blankets, and your weight and your heat used to iron your trousers. I shouldn't let me iron your nose, I don't think.
And this you passed on to the recruits?
Oh, yes, yes. And then there was what were called bullying your boots, polishing your boots. You had the toe caps and the heels highly polished. And that was done by polish and spit. You had to spit on your boots and rub it in and rub it in for hours and hours and hours and hours. I always remember this Sergeant Rafferty. He came on parade one day. Somebody often used to say the word equipment on, but this particular day he had equipment on. And his bayonet, he burnished it. And the way they used to buy these pads with like chain mail on, like a leather backing with chain mail on, and he used to burnish it, you know. And it was like chroming a piece of metal, but instead of being chrome, it was just polished by continually rubbing with his chain mail. And it was beautiful. And then the next time I saw him, was on a scheme where it poured down the rain and his paint was red rusty just because it had no protection. He burnished it all off. But all those little gadgets, they used to talk about urinating in your boots to make them softer. And I never stooped to that extent. Whether it was true or not, I don't know. I never even tried it.
The corporals, did you have your own mess in the camp, or did you eat in the
mess? Yes, we had a corporal's mess. But it was just a room off the naffy. Nothing elaborate.
You got the same rations as the men, did you?
Yes, we were just separated from the men.
Did you hold evenings for yourselves, corporals?
Yes, we had various things that were going. But, as I say, at the depot, we never had very much time to ourselves. We were training from 6 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night. It did ease a bit when we went to Bransford, a little bit, but not a great lot. And you see, you always got a competitive spirit in training. And the one platoon or one squad had to be better than the other. And then your squad was going to be the best. And you made sure it was, as far as possible, anyway. But that's a good thing in training, to have a competitive spirit. Because instead of teaching a person of war, it teaches them to be, you know, like a big game.
Was teaching the regimental history part of the course?
Yeah, very slightly though, not a great lot. You see, you didn't, at first of all, it wasn't so bad. You had 8 weeks training, is more or less drill and all. You got a little bit of weapon training, but not much. Then you did 8 weeks field training. And then after 16 weeks, you were a soldier compared to them. Now, I just heard on the television there the other day, the generation game, Jim Davison. Well, he had a group of Welsh Guards on. And he said to his son, how long does it take to make a guardsman? He says 6 months. So, it's obvious. they've got the time now, like, but in our day they didn't. And then later on, not only the change that, you got 8 weeks training, and that was it, and away you went. And that's the same thing that happened with the speed of marching. You see, 160 paces to the minute for the general line, it was too much for a recruit to absorb in 8 or even 16 weeks. So it was dropped down to 140 to accommodate the recruits.
I was going to ask you, you know, as the war went on, did training change in its in aspects as experience was learnt in effect in action? Was that coming down to you, the changes that were going on?
Yes. Well, to train a man for war, you can only give him some idea. You can never train anyone or show him or teach him what it's like in action. Because the fear of getting killed is not there. All right, I've been on battle courses and all sorts of weapon training courses. They fired live ammunition at you. But I knew that they weren't trying to kill me. They would find over my head and let me know what a round from a rifle sounded or a machine gun burst sounded or a grenade sounded like. But you can never teach a man actual war. And I always believe this. If you go into action with your regiment, if you live the first 3 weeks, you live a long time. If you're going to get killed, 9 times out of 10, you get killed in the first 3 weeks. Because you've got to go right back to nature to be a fighting soldier. All your senses has got to come back, which normally you don't use in civilian life. I mean, the sense of smell, touch, hearing, all those come back. Your hearing comes to be very acute. Your smell, you can smell it after a period of time. You can smell a chap smoking from 100 yards away. All these senses come back. And it's only done by actually going into action. But you can never teach. You give them some idea what it's like. Teach them the basic principles. And I'll make a point here. Remember I said about a chap called Arnie Murley who joined with me. He got killed in D-Day. And I always said that he would get killed because he went by the book. If the book says you line up and you charge a brick wall, that's the way he would do it. And he was a jolly good soldier, good instructor and all that, but no good to go into action, because he would do it. You just can't go charging in at blooming machine guns. You get killed. You've got to think of how to attack them and all that. I think that's, I don't know much about it, but the Battle of the Somme, I think whoever ordered that attack must have been, you know, not quite there, because to have men charging at machine guns, you just can't do it. And you can take your history back as far as you like. You can go back to, I don't know if you've ever seen the film, The Zulu. Well, that was military training that beat them, and the fact that they had rifles. They didn't have automatic rifles, but they had rifles. But the according to the stories that I read about the Zulu, the only way the Zulu nation was beat was because we had machine guns and we had horses. We used, as far as I know, used to ride up near enough to fire the rifles and then turn around and ride away, and the Zulus couldn't catch them. Man to man, I don't think the British soldier would have very much chance. Apart from this Zulu firm, where they were in a missionary, in a hut, in a building rather, and you just had the old front rank fire, rear rank fire, front rank fire, and this sort of business. But to teach a man the basic, you can only teach them the basic principles of war.